Labyrinth of Sorrows by George Mann. Performed by Sean Barrett, Rupert Degas, and Saul Reitley. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. The planet was dead. A rotten husk suffocated beneath a blanket of thick, pestilent fog. Kasherat had always been a place of death, a mortuary world bristling with the stele of glorious tombs overgrown with forests of monumental spires and statuary. Here there was nothing but tributes to the long-dead heroes of old, the forgotten soldiers of millennia past. Yet now, even the curators of this hallowed place were dead or diseased, overcome, conquered. If there was any indigenous life left upon this blighted world, it was nothing but carrion, picking over the remains of what had gone before, reveling in the reek of death and despair. Kasherat had been lost, just as its sister planets in the Sargassian Reach had been lost, swept away in a tide of blood, plague, and suffering. Here, on Kasherat, the Imperium had buckled. Here, there was only death. Yet amongst the marble tombs of this vast necropolis, things were stirring. Things that had once resembled human beings, but were now barely recognizable as such. Things so depraved, deformed, and pox-ridden that they were reduced to scuttling through the shattered ruins like so many animals running errands for their foul masters. These were the pitiful wretches who had given over their lives to the sickening. These were the disciples of Nurgle. Amongst these former men walked the grotesque giants of the warband Imperion's Blight, space marines of the heretical Death Guard Legion, traitors to the Emperor's cause. Monsters, Captain Daeed considered, who deserved nothing as forgiving as simple death. These foul warriors of chaos, polluted not only by the stink of treachery, but also by the stench of unnatural plague, had prosecuted a brief and terrible campaign throughout the Sargassian Reach. 7 Imperial worlds had been obliterated, the populations poisoned, the very soil blighted beneath the boots of their oppressors. Even now, war still raged across the surface of 3 of these planets, although Daeed knew that without reinforcements, without some way to alter the course of the war, the Imperial cause was all but lost. The Plague Marines were legion, and they, in contrast, were few. Nevertheless, Daeed would fight on until the bitter end, clinging to those benighted worlds until the very last of them had fallen. Such was the duty of a Space Marine. Such was the honor of a brazen Minotaur. For now, though, Daeed had other priorities to attend to. The means, perhaps, by which to turn the tide of the war. At the very least, the means by which he could offer his brothers a fighting chance, a reason to hope. Somewhere on Kasherat was the key to their salvation. If only he could find it. Daeed sat rigid in his webbing as the Thunderhawk banked, its engines howling as it dipped beneath the cover of the dark, viscous clouds. The planet's atmosphere was thick with the aura of death, a haze of green mist that cloaked the mortuary world to form a near impenetrable shroud. The Thunderhawk sighed as its air brakes dragged at this putrid fog, churning great funnels in its wake. It slewed around, searching for a place to set down, its search lamps penetrating the eerie gloom. It drifted along a corridor of marble spires, dipping and banking to avoid the structures that loomed out of the fetid haze. And then, moments later, the pilot was easing it down between 2 massive obelisks, its landing gear sinking into the soft loam. The engines wheezed for a moment longer, and then were still. If the arrival of the Thunderhawk had been noticed by anyone on the planet's surface, it went unremarked. There was no chatter of autocannons, no bark of plasma guns. Either the traitors were unaware of Daeed's arrival, or they were unconcerned. The latter thought didn't offer Daeed much comfort as he pulled himself free of the webbing, glancing from side to side to see his battle brothers doing the same. A few seconds later, the vessel's hatch slid open, and Captain Daeed of the Brazen Minotaur's third company stood framed in the doorway, a gleaming silhouette against the stark light spilling out from within. He was tall, even for a space marine, encased in shimmering golden power armor. His shoulders were draped with the pelt of one of the hulking black lions that roamed the forests of Tauron, his home world, and his left pauldron bore the blue-on-white bull's head insignia of his chapter. In his fist, he carried a slender power axe, its head finely etched with Tauronic traceries and runes. Daeed's neck was thick with muscle, and his face was craggy and tanned, pitted with innumerable scars, as if he wore his centuries of service to the Emperor like tally marks on his flesh. He stood for a moment, sucking at the foul air, his nose wrinkling in distaste. His eyes narrowed as he surveyed the eerie landscape around them.
There is nothing but death here, Badus.
In response, another figure appeared in the hatchway behind him. He wore the same shining golden armor as his captain, but his lower face was swathed in a long, plaited beard, and he carried a bolter in his right fist.
The stench of the traitor. Their very presence is enough to choke the life out of a world.
True enough, brother.
Daeed hefted his axe.
But remember, we are not here to reclaim Kasharat from the traitors, much as the notion galls me. We are here to retrieve what they have taken from us, so that we may use it against them. We must look to the war and not to the battle. This mortuary world will be of little use to either side in the conflict ahead.
Aye, but it makes for a damn good hiding place.
Bardus peered out through the open hatch. He raised his bolter as he spoke, as if he expected something diabolical to come lurching out of the fog at any moment. Daeed could hardly blame him for that. It wasn't as if it hadn't happened before. They'd been caught unawares any number of times in the last few months during their extended campaign against the Death Guard. There were things in the fog, half-dead things that didn't even register life signs on their auspexes. Cursed things. The spawn of chaos. The damned smog gave the enemy their best advantage. That, and the fact they seemed able to survive wounds that would have felled a normal space marine, shrugging off bolter fire and blows from Daeed's power axe as if they'd barely been scratched. Then, of course, there were their minions, creatures that had once been men, but were now nothing but shambling, diseased carcasses, unholy plague spawn, created only to spread the festering curse of chaos ever further, or to soak up fire on the field of battle. Even these pitiful creatures had proved difficult to dispatch in such incessant numbers. The Death Guard had infected the populations of entire worlds as they'd cut a swathe through the Sargassian Reach. Now, they were goading the fallen into battle in their multitudes.
You stand there talking like tacticians, brothers!
Targus laughed as he hefted his heavy bolter onto his shoulder behind them.
I hunger for the opportunity to put some more of those plague-ridden traitors out of their misery.
Daeed grinned. He could understand that impulse, the desire to smite the traitorous wretches where they stood. He relished the idea as much as Targus himself, burned, in fact, with the need to bring the Emperor's justice to bear on their corrupt souls.
I assure you, Targus, there will be time enough for us all to blunt our axes in the stinking corpses of our enemies. I wish for nothing more myself, but first, we have a job to do.
Daeed turned and strode down the disembarkation ramp, his footsteps strangely muffled by the thick, diseased air. Glancing up, he could make out only the spear-like tips of mortuary structures silhouetted against the sky, and the dull orbs of the twin moons that circled Kasharat in their stately, perpetual dance. Around him, there was nothing but an impenetrable bank of putrid fog. Yet even before it was infested with the plague, Dai mused, there would have been a grim, funereal air about the place. He stood for a moment as the others clambered out of the hatch, coming to join him, their boots sinking in the sticky loam.
Engage your respirators.
Daed fixed his own mouthpiece into place and activated his foxlink.
Keep this foul air from settling in your lungs.
He glanced around at his assembled squad as they followed his lead, each of them fixing their helms to their gorgets with a series of hissing pneumatic sighs.
Bast, check your auspex for signs of life.
Bast unclipped the device from his belt and studied the radar.
Nothing, Captain.
He turned the auspex so that Daed could see the display.
It's this fog. It smothers everything. I can't get a reading. It's as if the mist itself is alive.
Widen the spectrum. Look for anything at all.
Captain!
Daed silenced Thrall's objections with a wave of his hand. The auspex chirped momentarily before going silent again.
Hushed!
It's intermittent, Captain. But there is something there. A beacon.
Bast turned, and the auspex emitted another dull electronic bleep.
That way!
He pointed to indicate the direction from which he'd registered the distress signal.
It's most likely a trap!
Targus moved around to stand before Daed.
They may be traitors, but they are not fools. They know we are here.
Daed set his jaw. He fixed Targus with a resolute stare.
All?
Aye, Captain.
Move out.
Daed watched Targus as he fell into formation behind the others, the enormous bulk of the heavy bolter balanced on his right pauldron. He understood his brother's reluctance. They probably were walking into a trap. But there were no other options. They had a mission to complete, and they were brazen minotaurs. They would face whatever the enemy put before them with unflinching determination, and they would do it in the name of the Emperor. That, or they would die trying. Daed hefted his power axe, unholstered his bolt pistol, and fell into line behind the others. Through the shadows they moved, as if they had surrendered their corporeal forms to become spirits or wraiths, as if the very shadows themselves were living things that shifted and breathed. Shadows that wore black ceramite armor and harbored vicious adamantium claws. Shadows that were trained to kill. Ravens. Shadow Captain Corrin of the Raven Guard flexed his neck and shoulders to dispel the tension. He sensed more than saw his brothers, Argis, Grievous, Cyrus, and Corvan, as the five of them crept through the narrow tunnels of the maze-like mortuary complex, surrounded by the remnants of the dead. Dour faces, hewn from soapstone and marble, loomed out at him from all sides in the gloaming, their blank eyes watching him passively from across the centuries. Ornate tombs, stone coffins, and the skeletal remains of old politicians and administrators, some of them still wearing their now faded finery, lined the walls, embedded in roughly chiseled niches like insects in a hive. It had once been a sacred place, a place to honor the dead in the name of the Emperor. Now, though, the blight of chaos had infected the planet, and even here, in the bowels of this ancient mortuary complex, the evidence of corruption was all around them. Foul mist clung to the air, turning everything a pale, putrid green. The walls were slick with ochre slime, which seemed to quiver and move with the perturbations caused by their passing. Worst of all was the stench, the rotten reek of death and decay that pervaded everything, threatening to overwhelm even Corrin's hardened senses. He didn't know what had brought the Death Guard to Kasharat, a mortuary world on the outer rim of the Imperium. Their reasons were opaque. It may simply have been a symptom of their inexorable drive to spread their foul plague. that burning, zealous desire to infect world after world with their sickening rot. But their actions hinted at some greater purpose. Corin knew that his bull-headed brothers, the brazen Minotaurs, would be concerned only with smiting the enemy and not with understanding their motives. To them, Corin knew, the enemy were the enemy, faceless traitors who needed only to be vanquished. That was all they needed to know. Their strategies were not subtle. They did not need to understand their enemy in order to strike them with a wall of sheer force, to overwhelm them with firepower. There was a certain honesty in that sort of combat, and Corin respected the brazen Minotaurs for their unwavering, unquestioning approach. He had seen them storm their way to victory on more than one occasion, a fist of iron driven into the very heart of the enemy. The sons of Korax, however, excelled at a different kind of combat. Corin knew how to strike an enemy where it hurt, to search out their weak points, to foil their plans. The Raven Guard struck from the shadows and were gone before the enemy was even aware of what had happened. That, he knew, was what was needed here on Kasharat. That would ensure the success of their mission. The mortuary complex would be easily defended, and a full assault would result only in a standoff. That standoff, in turn, would result in a siege that would take days, if not longer, to break. And days were a luxury the brazen Minotaurs didn't have. Not if they wanted to retrieve their target in one piece. Corin hoped that their brothers might have had a chance by now to pick up the signal from the beacon he had planted earlier amongst the corpses of the corrupted humans who had guarded the entrance to the mortuary complex. He slowed as the passageway opened into a large, cavernous space. They were now far below ground, and looking up, Corin could see that the space had originally been a natural formation, remodeled sometime in the distant past for the mortuary builder's macabre purposes. Huge stalactites dripped from the roof, like fangs encircling an enormous maw. Two colossal statues towered over them, the figures' heads bowed in quiet repose. Each of them clutched a sword and shield and wore an unfamiliar pattern of armor. Effigies, Corin assumed, of ancient heroes long since forgotten. At the feet of these towering figures stood a small group of grotesque creatures, formerly human, but now mutated and corrupted by the sickening. One bore a writhing, wriggling proboscis where its arm had once been, erupting from just beneath the shoulder joint to curl snake-like in the air. The man's face was deformed with pustulent growths, and his belly was distended and marred with puckered sores. Beside him, another appeared to have lost his lower jaw. His tongue, now oversized and sickly yellow, lolled across his naked chest, where his skin erupted in innumerable boils. He clutched a las rifle in his disgusting, weeping fingers. There were five others, each of them bearing the diabolical mark of Nurgle. Corin glanced from side to side, noting how his brothers had fanned out in the shadows, drawing a wide semicircle around the group of cultists. This was how the Raven Guard worked. So attuned were they to each other, so practiced were they in the art of subtle warfare, that he need not even issue his command. Intuitively, his veterans knew what he expected, what was necessary. Corin readied himself. He would enjoy this, enjoy dispatching these foul bearers of the taint. Silently, he raised his twin lightning claws, the flashing blades glinting in the half-light. He drew his breath, and then swooped forward, barely making a sound as he erupted from the shadows like a whirlwind of slashing blades, spinning about so that his talons traced wide circles through the miasmic air. The lightning claws parted the flesh of the nearest cultist like warm butter, slicing him open from shoulder to belly so that his body collapsed silently in a bloody heap in the dirt. Corin's blood sang as he twisted, knocking aside the raised barrel of the las rifle and skewering a second cultist through the belly. The man opened his mouth as if to howl in agony, but was silenced a second later as Corin's other set of talons flashed, removing the cultist's head from his shoulders and spattering hot, festering blood over Corin's ebony chest plate. Around him, Corin's brothers moved silently in the dance of death, ducking and weaving and swiping as their blades and talons dispatched the remaining five cultists in a matter of sheer moments. The disciples of the Death Guard barely had time to register what was happening before it was all over. None of them even had the opportunity to squeeze off a shot or so much as raise an arm in defense. Within seconds, the Raven Guard had melted away into the shadows, their work done. The only trace of their passing, the quivering heap of corpulent flesh and severed limbs on the ground, writhing with the swarms of maggots that the cultists had harbored within their obscene bodies. Talons dripping with gore, Corin moved silently to join his brothers.
Captain?
Yes, Argus.
I understand, Captain, that we owe the Brazen Minotaurs a grave debt. But should we not honor them on the field of battle as they honored us, and not silently from the shadows?
Argus, the Brazen Minotaurs honored us in the only way they know how. In open combat, using their brute strength to aid us in our hour of need. Their sacrifice was great, but honor is not simply a matter of trading one life for another, of standing side by side on the field of battle. We honor our brothers the way we know how. The situation on Kasharat demands more subtlety than our bullheaded brothers could muster. We repay our debt the Raven's way.
Yes, Captain.
One of the shadows up ahead inclined its head and Corin smiled. Yes, the Raven's way. Corin watched as Argus slipped away into the darkness and then followed silently behind. The corpses were hideous to look upon. And if he hadn't seen their like 1,000 times before, it might have been enough to turn even Daeed's iron stomach. There were at least 10 of them, perhaps more, heaped one upon another like some grisly diorama, an assemblage of severed limbs, decapitated heads, and spilled organs. Some of these body parts still writhed, as if by their own volition, as if the diabolical pestilence that had infected them was unwilling to release its foul grip, even now, after death. They twitched and spasmed as if trying to pull themselves back together, trying to reassemble themselves into new, blasphemous forms. Bast was standing over this strange monument to the dead, his jaw set firm in obvious disgust.
This appears to be the origin of the signal, Captain.
Daeed sensed movement and glanced down to see a twitching arm scrabbling in the dirt near his boots, its fingernails raking pathetically at his leg brace. He sent it spinning away into the murky fog with a sharp kick.
Explain. The beacon, Captain. It must be buried somewhere in there amongst the corpses, transmitting its distress signal.
Bast was still studying the readout on his Auspex, and he dropped to his haunches, running the device over the slurry of bodies. One of the torsos twitched suddenly, and Thrall stilled it again with a short burst from his bolter, sending a fountain of blood and gore into the air. It spattered Bast where he stood, but he continued to study the readout without comment.
Like I said, a trap! They're trying to lure us in!
The five brazen minotaurs were standing by the pillared entrance to a vast mausoleum complex, much of which Daeed had gathered was buried far beneath their feet. The readings he'd seen suggested there was a warren of tunnels and chambers stretching for miles below ground. Although given the interference caused by the green mist, he knew the veracity of any such readouts was in doubt. If they entered the labyrinthine structure, they'd be going in blind. The entrance yawned open behind him, a marble staircase descending into the gloom. The traitor's icons and wards were splashed in sickly green across the pillars like a warning. Or, Daeed considered, like a challenge.
A trap? Why would the enemy leave a distress beacon buried in a heap of their own dead?
The enemy are not easily fathomed.
Bardas had his back to them as he kept watch, surveying their surroundings for anything that might come swooping out of the fog.
There is no understanding the depths of their perversity.
Nor should we wish to understand it, Badus. For to understand it is to give yourself over to its foul corruption.
Daid glanced from side to side, hefting his axe as if anxious to bury it in something.
But Tagus is right. It may yet prove to be a trap.
Or worse, there may be others who wish to claim our targets as their own.
Daid nodded as he mulled this over. Were there other hostile forces here on Kasharat? Their surveillance had suggested only the presence of the Death Guard traitors and their cretinous followers. But perhaps Bast was right. Perhaps another faction had seen the opportunity to alter the course of the conflict in their favor. Perhaps even now, they were winding their way through the tunnels below in search of Daid's quarry. Targus was shaking his head impatiently, and Daid prickled with annoyance.
Captain, we should leave this place. No good will come of it. The enemy waits for us inside. I am convinced these stinking corpses are nothing but a tribute to their vile god, intended only to lure us into their trap. We should return to where the real battle is, where we can honor the Emperor with blood on our axes, instead of skulking around here amongst the filth and the dead.
Daid shook his head.
No, Targus. I too long for the opportunity to cleave their traitorous heads from their shoulders, to spill their foul blood upon my boots. But our mission here is critical. The fate of worlds rests on what we might find inside that foul warren. If Bast is right, if it were to fall into the hands of others, we cannot risk it. So, we will go on in the name of the Emperor, and we will do what is needed of us. We are brazen Minotaurs.
Daid turned at the sound of a boot scraping on stone, expecting to find another of the serpentine body parts stealing away from its kin. Instead, he caught sight of a human being squatting on a nearby rock, cocking its head as it listened into their conversation. One of its eyes had swollen to unnatural proportions, and its forearms and fingers had become bloated and fat, oozing pus and ichor. When it saw him looking, it made to scramble away behind the rock, dragging its enormous, distended belly behind it. Daid leapt forward, moving faster than his immense size belied. He shot out his gauntleted fist and grabbed the pitiful thing's head between his fingers. The creature whimpered and stared up at him, its scabrous lips parting as if about to beg for its life, but Daid did not award it the opportunity to speak. He closed his fist, bursting its fragile skull between his fingers. Its twitching corpse dropped to the ground, stinking pus and blood spurting from the stump of its neck. Daid glanced around at his brothers.
We press on. We find what we came here for, trap or otherwise.
He didn't wait for their agreement before stalking forward and disappearing into the enveloping darkness of the mausoleum complex. The incessant buzzing was growing louder. Corin pressed himself into an alcove and waited. The five Raven Guard had wound their way deeper into the mortuary complex, drawing closer to what their auspexes and their intuition told them was the nexus of the labyrinth, the heart of the structure, where, they reasoned, the target would be found. And, Corin considered, most likely a concentration of traitor marines and their pox-ridden kin, too. They had dispatched another seven cultists as they'd passed through the warren of tunnels and deeper into the bowels of the structure. Here, the ornamentation of the tombs was less ostentatious, more functional, older even than those above. In sharp contrast, evidence of inhabitation by the traitors grew all the more explicit. Rotting, fleshy membranes covered much of the walls, dripping with toxic slime. And the ground was thick with an oozing, corrosive sludge that lapped around their boots and made it harder for them to pass in silence. Bright runes flickered inside Corin's helm, warning of airborne poisons and miasmic spores that once lodged in the lungs would multiply at an alarming rate overloading even the resilient metabolism of a space marine. Toxic shock would follow, or worse, infection by the vile pestilence that had claimed the traitors. Corin knew what he would do before he ever succumbed to that. He thanked the Emperor for the resilience of his respirator. The buzzing was closer now, the screaming whine of engines churning the fetid air. Corin watched the mouth of the tunnel, readying himself for battle, waiting to see what would round the bend. Moments later, he got his answer. Two man-sized machines came buzzing along the passageway, twin rotary engines burring. They hovered a meter above the ground, red lights winking in the darkness like murderer's eyes. They were composed of nothing but huge sacks of decaying, quivering flesh, melded with corroded machine parts and weapons, in what Corin took to be a sick parody of life. He had seen their like before on the field of battle. Blight drones. The drones buzzed down the tunnel towards the Raven Guard, trailing stringy mucus behind them, where they brushed against the dripping walls. Corin gave a minute shake of his head, and he hoped his brothers had seen him in the gloom. They would let the foul things pass, engaging them only if they themselves were engaged. The drones were guards, nothing more, and destroying them would not only be a waste of ammunition, it would also risk bringing about unnecessary attention. The mission was everything. The instruments of the enemy could wait. Corin watched with gritted teeth as they brushed past, filling the passageway with their disgusting bulk, their putrid flanks only centimeters from his helm. Moments later, the buzz of their rotary engines had receded into the distance. Corin eased himself out of the alcove where he'd been concealing himself. He watched as his four brothers did the same, seemingly solidifying from the shadows, their ebon armor coalescing out of the darkness. Silently, they moved on. The tunnels continued to descend into the earth, winding and doubling back on themselves, sometimes opening into wider, uninhabited caverns, other times drawing in until they were so narrow that Corin had to walk sideways to squeeze his bulk through them. Gravis took the lead at the head of the small squad, and it was soon after they'd put an end to another clutch of cultists that Corin saw him stop suddenly at the mouth of a T-junction and hold up his hand in warning.
What is it, Gravis?
Death Guard, Captain. Three of them, up ahead.
Stealthily, Corin slipped past Cyrus and the others, coming to stand beside Gravis. He peered around the corner. There, in the sickly glow of a candle sconce, stood three of the traitor marines. Their now deformed armor was ancient, more ancient even than Corin's own venerable suit of Corvus pattern armor. Unlike Corin's, however, that of the traitors was now so degraded and corroded that it barely appeared to offer them any protection at all. It had clearly been altered to accommodate the mutated bulk of its inhabitants, and Corin guessed they must have worn it for eons, ever since the warp had first swallowed them and spat them out again in new, twisted, decrepit forms. Their flesh had grown through the cracks in the ceramite plating, enveloping it, causing the suits to become intrinsically part of them, inseparable from what remained of their once glorious bodies. Their heads bulged beneath their broken helms, and Corin could see the face of one of them through the broken visor, his eyes shriveled and weeping toxic ichor. Poison gases spewed from vents between their armor plates. Each of them carried bolt pistols and power swords, their blades stained rusty brown with spilled blood. To Corin, the sight of the plague marines was disgusting beyond comprehension. Their vileness extended beyond the physical, of course. But it was as if their traitorous nature had manifested in their flesh, had been made physical and real as a result of their unholy pacts. He despised everything they stood for. One of them stood fingering his own entrails, which spilled out from a jagged crack in his power armor to hang loose around his knees. Insects and other, more unnatural creatures picked around in the ruins of his belly. Flies circled the heads of each of the traitors, and the reek of decay was all permeating, even through the relative protection of Corin's respirator.
For Korax, brothers.
For Korax.
Without even the slightest sound, Corin slipped around the corner, keeping his back to the wall as he began to maneuver himself into position for the ambush. The flickering candle in the wall sconce cast the plague marines in a warm, yellow orb of light, and Corin knew that to get close to them, he would have to betray his position. No matter. He and his brothers would silence the traitors before they had the opportunity to raise the alarm. He glanced back to see the others following behind. Cyrus, Gravis, and Argis across the tunnel from him, keeping to the shadows as they crept steadily towards their prey. The traitors seemed content with their own concerns, evidently still unaware of the Raven Guard's proximity. Corin paused, now just a few feet behind the nearest Death Guard. He could see the ancient iconography on the pauldron, the old symbol of their legion, now barely visible beneath layers of grime and necrotic, rippling flesh. He glanced at Argis, issued a hand gesture to indicate that the others should follow his lead, and then, in one swift motion, launched himself from the wall, unsheathed his combat blade from his belt, and slit the throat of the closest plague marine from behind. The traitor choked and stumbled backwards, causing Corin to do the same. Thick yellow pus oozed from the open wound in the Death Guard's throat, seeping out from the rotten tissue between his helm and the remnants of his gorget. The plague marine turned, swinging its fist up and round, catching Corin hard in the chest and sending him spinning to the ground. He could barely believe the traitor was still standing. The wound in his throat yawned open like a wet, smiling mouth, but the plague marine seemed utterly unperturbed by this wound, which should have felled him. Corin's brothers had engaged the other two traitors and were now locked in vicious hand-to-hand combat, ducking and weaving to avoid the poison blades that threatened to open up their armor and allow the pestilence inside. Corin rolled, springing to his feet, his lightning claws sparking as he thrashed out, tangling them in the traitor's intestines and wrenching them free. The plague marine's guts spattered in a heap by Corin's boots, but still he came on wordlessly, swinging his power sword in a wide arc so that Corin had to raise his other talons quickly to defend himself, batting aside the deadly weapon. The Death Guard staggered with the momentum, and seeing his chance, Corin kicked out, trying to keep the foul thing at bay. The Death Guard charged forward, ignoring a swipe from Corin's claw that drew four long gashes across its partially exposed chest. It struck him hard on his right shoulder, and he shuddered under the force of the blow, feeling his pauldron crack with the impact. Warning sigils flared up inside his helm. Once again, Corin lashed out, his talons raking open great furrows in the plague marine's belly, tearing away ceramite and stringy flesh. Still it came on. The thing was near impossible to kill, so close to death it was already. Corin twisted at the sound of Cyrus crying out beside him, and saw with horror that one of the other traitors now held his brother's beaked helm between its fists. He was appalled to see a broken fragment of spine trailing from the base of the helm, where the plague marine had physically ripped Cyrus's head from his shoulders. Crimson blood spouted from the stump of Cyrus's neck, and as Corin watched, his corpse toppled backwards against the passage wall, sliding to the ground in a black heap. Corin embraced the rage that he felt welling up inside of him, but did not allow it to overwhelm him. He ducked to avoid another swipe from the plague marine's fist, and struck low with his lightning claw, burying his talons in the traitor's right knee and shearing away its lower leg in a flurry of sparks. The traitor twisted and buckled, dropping heavily to the floor, its power sword skittering away across the ground. Wasting no time, Corin leapt forward, pinning one of the traitor's arms beneath his boot and forcing his talons into the throat wound he had opened earlier. He finished the job with a grunt of satisfaction, wrenching the plague marine's head from its body. It rolled away down the passageway amidst a shower of dark blood. Corin turned to see that Argis had finally felled another of the Death Guard, carving out its twin hearts with his talons and his combat blade. Gravis had the third pinned against the wall, writhing and belching foul gases as it fought to get free. It was a matter of a moment's work for Corin to part that one's head from its shoulders too. And Gravis allowed the corpse to drop to the ground, still twitching. Argis dropped to his knees, before the remains of his fallen brother. He looked up at Corin, still panting for breath.
I will honor him, Captain, by returning his Corvaya to the soil of distant Kiavar.
Quickly then, Argus. Do what is necessary to honor our fallen kin.
Argus cupped the bundle of fragile bird skulls suspended from fine chains on Cyrus's belt and gave them a sharp tug, pulling them free. He stood, hastily tying the talismans to the small cluster that hung from his own belt.
Another brother lost in battle. He will not be forgotten.
Corin stepped forward, putting a hand on Argus's shoulder.
Yes, brother. He will not be forgotten. But remember why we are here. The brazen Minotaurs sacrificed an entire company on Empalion II in order to enable the successful completion of our mission. We owe them a debt of honor, and we owe them our lives. Cyrus understood that.
They were silent for a moment.
Now, retrieve his progenoid glands, Argus. Hurry, we don't have much time.
Yes, Captain.
Argus drew a scalpel from his belt and set to work. Corin watched the mouth of the tunnel while Argus carried out the necessary procedure, the means by which their chapter's future would be secured, before carefully secreting Cyrus's gene seed in a pouch at his belt.
Now, help me move his body out of sight.
Corin stooped and took up Cyrus's legs, while Argus hefted the corpse beneath the arms, and silently they deposited it into one of the nearby alcoves in the wall, hidden from view.
A dusty tomb for a hero.
Corin surveyed the carnage all around them, feeling his shoulder twinge with pain. The traitor had obviously done more damage than Corin had initially realized. Not enough, however, to render the limb useless. He turned to face the remaining three members of his squad.
We draw closer to our goal, and closer to the heart of the enemy.
He only hoped that somewhere behind them, Captain Daid of the Brazen Minotaurs could say the same.
Move out.
It's as if someone is leaving us a trail.
Daid stared down at the ruins of a former traitor marine.
A trail marked in blood.
The traitor's wounds were still weeping dark, corrosive blood that scarred the stone floor where it pooled, forming hissing spirals of vapor. This was the fourth scene of its like that they had encountered as they passed through the winding tunnels, each of them alike, all lined with tributes to the long-forgotten dead.
Either that, or it is evidence that another faction are indeed here on Kasharat, searching for our price.
Daid nodded. He had yet to decide which he thought it might be. Either way, neither option offered him much comfort. Worse still, he could sense the warp-infested traitors all around him, elsewhere in the tunnels, seething like the poisonous vapor itself, like rodents scuttling about in the darkness. The notion filled him with a sharp sense of disquiet. Something, or someone, had passed this way, tearing through the defenses of the Death Guard to leave a path through the mausoleum complex. Whoever or whatever it was, they had enabled the brazen Minotaurs to pass unmolested into the lair of the enemy. The only question that still concerned Daid was why. It felt somehow wrong that he hadn't yet had cause to bloody his axe.
Captain.
Daid turned to see Bardus watching the passageway behind them, eager for his attention.
What is it, Bardus?
Listen.
Daid concentrated, straining to hear anything in the echoing depths of the mortuary. There it was, a droning, buzzing sound like that of a hovering insect.
I hear it.
Whatever it is, Captain, it's coming this way.
Daid smiled. Perhaps, finally, they had stirred the enemy in their nest.
Brace yourselves. Ready your weapons. I want to be prepared for them when they arrive.
Aye, Captain.
Bardus dropped to one knee and braced himself against the tunnel wall. The air here was thick and syrupy, denser than it had been even on the surface, and it obscured Daeed's vision, making it difficult to see what was coming, what diabolical thing was responsible for the noise. He longed for the clean air of Tauron, for the lush green forests filled with prides of the black lions that prowled through the wilds in their thousands. He longed for the hunt, for the feel of one of the great beasts struggling in his arms as he wrestled it to the ground, burying his hunting knife in its heart. He thought then of what the sickening would do to Tauron, and he raised his bolt pistol and power axe in defiance. That was what he fought to protect, to hold the forces of chaos at bay, to protect the Imperium from its terrible taint. Kasharat was already lost, but the weapon he hoped to recover here might prevent other worlds from falling. Whatever it was that had lured them here, down into that vast mortuary complex, Daeed knew then that he would defeat it. Something stirred in the swirling mist, but Daeed was unable to get any real sense of bearing of how far away the thing actually might be. He trained his bolt pistol on what he took to be the epicenter of the disturbance, but refrained from opening fire without knowing exactly what it was he'd be shooting at. He felt the fine hairs on the back of his neck prickle in anticipation. The mist began to churn. Daeed waved his hand to signal the others to remain quiet. He could hear the buzz of rotary engines now, drawing closer by the second. Bast had heard them too, and he raised his bolter in readiness.
Incoming!
Targus strafed left and dropped to one knee, swinging the heavy bolter up onto his shoulder. Seconds later, Daeed saw the hellish machines that were responsible for the sound. They burst out of the bank of green vapor, strange hovering contraptions about the size of a man, with twin rotary engines and bulbous fleshy torsos that hung from the metal casings like the bodies of fat maggots. The drones were half machine, half rancid flesh, and they bristled with winking lights and strange mechanical weapons. There were two of them, and they shot down the passageway, propelled at speed by their whirring engines. Daeed hefted his axe, preparing to make a swing for one if it came close enough. Beside him, Targus squeezed the trigger on his heavy bolter, and it boomed with explosive force in the confined space, belching an explosive shell at the lead drone. Targus's aim was true, and the bolter shell pierced the soft, fleshy tissue of the machine's torso. It exploded in a shower of glistening pus and mechanical components, its rotors clattering still to the floor. The reverberating sound of the explosion was enough to stir the other brazen minotaurs into action. Bast sent a spray of bolter fire arcing into the air, clattering off the walls as the other drone slid noisily out of the way, churning the green miasma as it shot forward and into their midst.
Keep away from its poisoned blades!
Daeed raised his bolt pistol and fired a number of shots into the flank of the bizarre thing, opening puckered wounds that wept like silent, screaming mouths. Targus was furiously loading another round into his heavy bolter, while the others continued to pepper the drone with shot after shot, holding the thing at bay.
Hurry, Targus!
Daeed glanced back to see Targus raising the weapon onto his shoulder once again. A spray of the machine's pustulent innards spattered over Daeed's arm brace, and too late he realized their error. The gloopy stuff began to corrode his power armor almost as soon as it came into contact with the Ceramite, chewing a series of deep pock marks where it had landed.
Hold your fire!
But his warning came too late. Targus had already pulled the trigger of the heavy bolter. The blight drone exploded in a fountain of acidic pus, showering Bardas in a concentrated burst, covering his golden armor in a spray of the nauseating yellow fluid. He staggered back a few steps as he tried to clear the stuff from his helm, and then realized what was happening as it began to chew its way into the crevices between the armor plating. He held his hand up and cried out in pain as his flesh began to disintegrate inside his armor. The drone itself was a trap, Daeed realized, like a deadly, hovering landmine. The corrosive filth inside it was a weapon, and it was eating away at the joints in Bardas's armor, seeping beneath the Ceramite to burn his flesh. There was nothing they could do, no way for them to save him without succumbing to the poison themselves. All they could do was watch as Bardas was slowly, inexorably overcome, until the poison had consumed his body, and he staggered back against the wall, issued a long, pained exhalation, and collapsed into a crumpled heap upon the ground. What was more, the noise of the heavy bolter fire meant they had given themselves away. Now the traitors would know they were there, and so would whoever was responsible for the trail of corpses that had led them this far into the complex. Targus lowered his weapon and pushed past the others to stand over the corpse of his fallen brother. He turned, wordlessly, to look at Daid.
Padus is lost, brothers, but we will honor him.
Daid reached up and unclasped the black lion's pelt that hung around his own shoulders. Foul vapor was now issuing from inside Bardas's armor as the poison burned through his corpse. A section of his helm had been eaten away, and beneath it, Daid could see the damaged, half-disintegrated remains of his brother's face. Daid stepped forward, dropped to his haunches, and draped the lion's pelt almost reverently over the corpse, as if it were a death shroud.
He was Lion God. His name will be recorded in the annals of Toron.
He stood, resting his hand upon Targus's pauldron.
There is nothing you could have done. You were not to know.
Targus nodded, but Daid could see he was grieving for the loss of his brother.
I will avenge him, Captain. On the field of battle, yes. But here, now, we must focus only on the mission. Put all other thoughts from your mind.
Captain!
The voice that interrupted them was insistent over the vox. Daid turned to see Bast approaching.
We must move swiftly, Captain, before the enemy mobilizes. The noise of the battle will draw them to us. This foul air gives them the advantage. They know the tunnels.
Daid nodded.
Lead on, Bast. Follow the trail of the dead. One way or another, we will reach our goal.
He started forward, but stopped short when his boot encountered something hard on the ground, which skittered away across the stone floor, clanging off the tunnel wall. Crossing to where it came to rest, Daid was surprised to see the beaked ebony helm of a space marine. He frowned when he noticed the sheared fragment of spinal column still jutting rudely from the base of the helm, and realized with surprise that the decapitated head of its former owner was still contained within. The wound looked recent. The stump of the neck was bloody and wet.
What is it, Captain?
Thrall came to stand beside him.
I'm not sure.
Daid turned to glance after Bast, who was already barely visible in the soupy miasma.
But I believe this confirms we have company on Kasharat.
The echo of heavy weapons fire reverberated through the tunnels like the crack of thunder. Corin and his Raven Guard froze in response, each of them attempting to ascertain from which direction the sound had come. It was somewhere up above, a few tunnels away, back towards the surface.
What are they doing? They'll have the whole place down upon us.
The Blight Drones. That is their way. They meet their enemies head on. They look them in the eye before they take their lives. There is honor in that.
They'll be meeting even more of them now. The pox-ridden scum will be swarming through these tunnels in a moment.
Corin nodded.
Yes. We must press on. We must keep the way clear. We're near to the heart of the complex now. There our brothers will find what they're looking for.
I hope it shall prove worth it.
Corin let the comment pass. He knew his brothers were still smarting from the loss of Cyrus. To the Raven Guard, so few, every fallen brother was painfully mourned, every loss keenly felt by all. But on Empalion II, the brazen Minotaurs had helped the Raven Guard to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. They had laid siege to a city under the sway of the Iron Warriors, sacrificing an entire company as a decoy in order to allow the Raven Guard to slip over the walls of the city and destroy the enemy from within. It was that which had brought Corin to Kasharat, that debt of honor. The brazen Minotaurs, bull-headed and brutal, could never have reached their target alone. and without it, they risked losing the entire conflict to the enemy warband. 7 Imperial worlds had already fallen, and it was Corrin's duty to come to their aid. He would not allow another world to succumb to the sickening. Footsteps pounded in an adjacent passageway. Corrin felt his pulse quicken. They would have to fight their way through from here on in, carving a bloody path through the corpses of the corrupted. It was not, perhaps, how he might have chosen to proceed with their mission. But Corrin had to admit, the notion of spilling more traitorous blood had a certain appeal. Corrin raised his lightning claws, which crackled and sparked in readiness.
Now, brothers, let us see how many of these vile traitors we can destroy.
Forgoing all sense of subtlety, Corrin took the lead, charging out of the mouth of the tunnel and directly into the path of a band of 7 cultists coming in the other direction. His talons flashed, and 3 of them fell before they'd even realized what was happening, torn asunder so violently that it showered Corrin's armor in a dark, fleshy ray. He heard the chatter of bolter fire from behind him, and knew that his brothers were there too, as he cut a swathe along the passageway.
Victorus aut mortis!
Corrin opened up the belly of another cultist before severing a 5th entirely in half at the midriff.
In the name of the Emperor.
Argyus whipped his combat blade around so that it opened a broad gash across the face of a cultist, slashing through flesh and bone alike and felling the foul man where he stood.
For Korax!
As more and more of the cultists spilled forth from the other end of the tunnel, Corrin smiled. He allowed the lust of battle to consume him, to fill his thoughts until he was barely conscious of his own actions, carried along by the ferocious rise and fall of combat, the dance of the raven. Within minutes, the corridor was filled with a tide of corpses, as if they had somehow washed up here, deposited and abandoned like unwanted flotsam, a torrent of death left in the wake of the living shadows. Corrin, dripping blood from his talons, charged on, allowing his intuition to guide him, crushing the enemy as he led his raven guard deeper below ground, down towards the heart of the mortuary complex. When he finally came to rest a short while later, it was beside the entrance to a large subterranean cavern. Here, an ornate doorway had been erected, a vast steepled arch towering above even the space marines' heads. It seemed incongruous to Corrin to find such a place at the heart of such a dark, oppressive structure. Immense statues stood proud and silent on either side of the yawning archway, their heads, hands, and feet now vandalized, leaving them deformed and unrecognizable. Their blank faces stared unseeing into eternity. Corrin stepped to one side, pressing himself up against the wall in order to remain out of sight. He glanced round to see Argyus's helm looming out of the gloom beside him.
I sense movement inside.
Corrin could tell that Argyus was now spoiling for another fight, as if he'd had a taste of battle and was now filled with the rush of it, with the desire to smite the enemy. But Corrin knew it would be wrong for them to go any further. This was no longer their fight.
No.
He shook his head.
This is a battle our brothers should face alone. We should allow them that, at least. The opportunity to defeat the beast in its own lair. We have done what we came here to do. To lead them to their goal, to ease their path to victory as they once did ours. Now, we must leave them to finish it. To taste the blood of their enemies for themselves.
Yes, Captain.
If he was disappointed, he did not allow it to show in his voice.
The Raven's way.
And besides, we need to clear them a path out of here. There are plenty more of those traitorous wretches waiting for us in the tunnels above.
Argyus raised his bolt pistol.
I am ready, Captain.
Corrin turned and made a hand gesture for the others to follow, and then, silently, the Raven Guard melted once more into the shadows. It had been a bloodbath. Whatever had happened here in this confined tunnel, it had been carnage. Someone, and having found the beaked helm in the passageway above, Taid was beginning to form an idea of who might have been responsible, had ripped through a swarm of enemy cultists, shredding them apart limb from limb, leaving behind a slick mess of body parts and eviscerated corpses. It wasn't so much a bloody trail as the evidence of a massacre. There must have been 30 or more of the corrupted humans, their wretched mutated cadavers already rotting where they had fallen. It was difficult to make out their true number. Their remains were no longer whole enough to be able to judge.
What happened here?
Dai knew it was a rhetorical question, echoing all of their thoughts.
Help! We were wrong to assume we were being led into a trap, or that another foe was engaged in attempting to beat us to our target. Whoever did this, they are allies. Someone is clearing us a path.
Clearing us a path? But who?
There'll be time for that later.
Daid brandished his axe before him to underline his point.
We are close to our goal. I can sense it. We must press on. We must make good on the fortune we have been granted.
He turned and charged off along the passageway, his boots sloshing in the spilled blood of the enemy. The others fell in behind him, and together, the four brazen minotaurs began their final descent into the heart of the enemy labyrinth. It was not long before Daid, following in the wake of his benefactors, located the entrance to the central cavern at the nexus of the mortuary complex. The path had been made clear to him by the grisly trail of fallen cultists. They were heaped against the tunnel walls or spread out upon the ground, in some instances two or three deep at a time. Some of them, he had realized as he thundered down the tunnels, were still alive, scrabbling at his legs as they bled out from terrible wounds or tried to push their spilled organs back into their bodies. He finished many of them as he ran, crushing their skulls with his boots or spreading their infected brains across the walls with a swift shot from his bolt pistol. Now, in the shadow of the enormous archway, surrounded by wispy green mist, Daid stood shoulder to shoulder with his brothers, ready to face whatever, or whoever, was waiting for them in the dank cavern beyond. Without a word, he stalked forward into the gloom, his bolt pistol tracking back and forth, his footsteps ringing out in the cavernous space. Inside, the cave had been dressed to resemble an elaborate temple, with a corridor of ornate marble columns leading to a raised dais, upon which Daid saw, with a quickening of his hearts, their target rested. The supine form of Theseon, the chief librarian of the Brazen Minotaurs. Theseon, apparently unconscious, was lashed to a marble slab, and as Daid watched, a number of human cultists worked strange ministrations over his power armor, splashing unguents across his chest plate and painting runes upon his pauldrons in livid green paint. They were trying, Daid knew, to weaken Theseon so that their psychers could extract the secrets from his mind. He only hoped that Theseon had been able to remain pure during these assaults on both his body and his mind. It had been days since he'd been taken, captured alive on the field of battle, and Daid knew that he had only two options: to kill the librarian before Theseon gave himself up to the creatures of the warp, or to save him and return him to his brothers. He hoped for the latter, but as he entered the grotesque temple, he began to prepare himself for the former. Around them, candles flickered in sconces upon the walls, casting everything in a dull, flickering glow. Between the pillars, the remnants of ancient statues watched forlornly as Daid and Targus strode forward, preparing to slaughter the infidels who held their brother captive. But Daid knew immediately that something was wrong. The cultists hadn't so much as stirred as the brazen minotaurs had entered the chamber. They hadn't even looked up from their diabolical work at the sound of the space marine's thundering footsteps. Where were the guards? Where were the former Death Guard, the traitorous space marines of Empyrean's Blight? Surely they would not leave such a precious weapon as Theseon, guarded by mere humans? Daid's questions were answered a moment later as he neared the flight of stone steps that led up to the dais. From the darkness, off to his left, he became aware of a wet, rasping laugh. and the sound of footsteps splashing heavily in the poisonous slurry that pooled on the floor. Raising his axe, Daid turned to see one of the most horrific creatures he had ever encountered emerging from between two of the pillars. It had once been a space marine, but now it was a disgusting, lumbering monster. The remnants of its Terminator armor hung off its twisted, gangrenous flesh, and half of its ribcage was exposed to the elements, allowing Daid to see through to one of its black, beating hearts. It had swollen to almost twice its original size, and a large, bony horn protruded from the center of its forehead, erupting through the remains of its helm. Acid dribbled freely from the orifice that had once been its mouth, and its respirator had been almost entirely eaten away by corrosion. Necrotic flesh hung in loose strips from between the plates of its ruined armor. In its left fist, it clutched a storm bolter, but its right arm was now a wriggling mass of tentacles, at least six of them, each of them dripping with glistening venom. Strange, repulsive creatures, about the size of rats, scuttled over its body, burrowing in and out of its flesh. The monster was flanked on either side by two plague marines, each of them clutching bolters which were trained on Daid and his brothers.
For the Emperor!
Daid wasted no time. With a bellowing roar, he lowered his head and shoulders, raised his power axe, and charged. The creature's storm bolter barked, spewing shells, but Daid charged on, strafing left and right, and swinging his axe in a wide arc over his head. It connected with the monster's chest, shattering ancient ceramite and ribs indiscriminately, burying itself deep inside the rotten husk of the former space marine. The creature staggered back under the force of the blow, wrenching the shaft of the axe out of Daid's gauntlets in the process, so that half of the weapon's double-bladed head still protruded from his chest. Then, almost as if the weapon had barely caused a scratch, it came on again, lashing out with its multiple tentacles, gripping Daid's legs from underneath him so that he fell hard to the floor. Daid scrabbled for purchase, attempting to lever himself up before the massive bulk of the thing fell upon him. He could hear the chatter of bolter fire from behind him, and realized that his brothers had engaged the two plague marines, keeping them busy while he tackled the beast. The creature raised its left leg as if to crush him beneath it, but Daid rolled, springing up onto his feet. Just as the thing was struck by a blast from Targus's heavy bolter, punching a massive hole in its left side and spilling its rotten innards across the floor, Daid raised his bolt pistol and pressed forward, shooting openly into the creature's face so that it howled in pain and stumbled back against one of the pillars. Hand shot out from the strange fleshy membrane that covered the pillar, and Daid realized with disgust that there were humans in it, half subsumed by the gelatinous goo, so that they had become one with the walls, their bodies melding into the organic morass. They clutched the former space marine to them in their fleshy embrace, and it battered them off, lumbering forward, its storm bolter raised. It snapped out a reply to Tarvis's heavy bolter, and Daid saw his brother reel, shredded by the explosive rounds as they chewed pockmarks in his chest and face. He fell without issuing a sound, his weapon clattering noisily to the ground.
Tarkus!
Roaring in rage and defiance, Daid rushed forward, his bolt pistol flaring. The creature swung around, its trigger still depressed, and Daid felt a sharp pain in his left shoulder as a stray shot burst through his armor, blowing out the top of his arm and rendering the limb useless. Warning sigils flared in his helm display, but he charged on regardless, crying out for vengeance, ignoring the pain. Daid slammed against the rotten bulk of the creature, striking it hard in the face with his good fist. He felt its tentacles lash out in response, curling around his waist and squeezing him with crushing force. He could smell the thing now, even through his respirator, and its stench was repugnant, the very scent of death itself. Choking as the creature tried to squeeze the life out of him, Daid grabbed for the shaft of his axe, hauling on it with all of his might in an effort to wrench it free. He felt it give as the creature shifted, and he pressed on with renewed vigor, working the blade back and forth, until it finally slid free in a spray of sickly ichor. Daid was feeling dizzy now from the sheer force being exerted upon his body. His armor was beginning to crack under the pressure, and he could feel where the creature's acidic spittle was searing his flesh, having burned through the ceramite where it had pattered across his chest plate. He had only moments to act. With a huge effort,
Taid raised the axe as high above his head as his good arm would allow him, and then brought it down in a sharp chopping motion, throwing all of his strength behind it. His aim was true, and the blade struck the creature hard in the side of the throat, where its acidic discharge had rotted away its armor. The creature lurched backwards, loosening its grip and allowing Daid to drop to the floor. It staggered back, its storm bolter swinging aimlessly. And then, to Daid's relief, its head slid from its shoulders, the last vestiges of its decaying flesh failing to hold it in place any longer. The head struck the stone floor only seconds before the lurching, spasming body. Daid clambered up onto his feet, twisting around to see how his brothers were faring. Thrall was on the ground, his leg shattered at the knee, but with the corpse of a fallen plague marine at his feet. Bast was standing over the toppled remains of the other, still spraying its now obliterated face with bolter fire. Daid staggered over to them.
Targos is lost.
We shall mourn him later.
Daid put a hand on Bast's pauldron to stay his brother's hand. Bast released the trigger of his bolter, and the last echoes of the battle died a few moments later. On the dais, the cultists were working furiously to release the chains that bound Theseon to the marble slab, evidently planning to flee.
Hand me your bolter, brother.
Daid passed his axe to Bast and took his brother's weapon in return. He raised it, took aim, felled the screaming cultists one by one as they finally acknowledged his presence and bolted for cover, abandoning the librarian where he lay. None of them made it as far as the door.
Bast, see to Thrall. I'll see to Theseon.
Daid crossed the cavern, taking the steps two at a time as he leapt onto the dais. There on the marble slab, Theseon lay unmoving, still wearing his bright blue power armor, which had now been covered in blasphemous scroll. He was still alive, that much was clear to Daid almost immediately, but he had retreated into a Sus-Anik coma, disappearing into his own mind in an effort to protect himself and the secrets of his chapter from the foul ministrations of the Death Guard Psykers. Whether he might ever be roused from it, Daid did not know. He hoped it would be so. Theseon's mind was a powerful weapon, and he was needed if the war against the Chaos forces was to be won. But now was not the time for such thoughts. Daid would have to carry the librarian to the surface. He only hoped their mysterious benefactors had thought to consider their escape, too. It was the work of only moments to wrench Theseon free of the chains that bound him. Daid turned to see Thrall, upright, resting on Bast, his shattered leg hanging useless and limp. With a groan of agony at the sharp pain in his left shoulder, Daid hefted the bulk of the supine librarian over his shoulder and staggered towards the door. Their passage to the surface proved relatively uneventful, if painfully slow. There was evidence everywhere of the passing of another party, corpses strewn at every junction, tunnels spattered with the blood of both human cultists and traitorous Death Guard. Once again, it was clear to Daid that someone had seen fit to carve them a path to the surface. With the burden of the injured Thrall and the unconscious Theseon, it was a much-needed reprieve. Above, on the planet's surface, the green mist now swirled thicker than ever, cloying and sickly even through Daid's helm. Trusting his instincts, he staggered into the haze towards where he believed the Thunderhawk to rest amongst the broken spires of the vast temple complex that bristled across the crust of the Forsaken world. Soon enough, the shadow of the vessel hulked out of the fog to greet them. Daid staggered over to the ship, reaching for the control panel that would release the boarding hatch. But his fingers encountered something unexpected there. He glanced down to see something dangling on the end of a chain that had been draped over the release mechanism. It was a tiny, fragile bird skull, bleached white and stained with spatters of dark blood. The skull of a raven. He had seen their like before, hanging from the belts of fellow space marines, ebon armored warriors of the Raven Guard, whom he had fought beside on Empelion 2. He cupped the totem in his fist, and then thumbed the release control, causing the hatchway to hiss open like a gull's wing.
What is it, Captain?
Bast stood behind him as he held the Raven's skull up to the light. It twisted as it dangled on the fine chain.
Hope that we may yet win this war, and a debt repaid.
Daid slipped the totem into a pouch at his belt, and then strode purposefully up the ramp towards the waiting vessel. The brazen Minotaurs would triumph yet in this conflict. They had brother Theseon, and they had help from the most unexpected of quarters. Daid grinned as he dropped Theseon onto a bench and secured him into place with the webbing. He wondered if, even now, the sons of Korax were watching from the shadows. The thought filled him with an unexpected mix of confidence and dread. Seconds later, the hatchway hissed shut once again, and Bast gunned the Thunderhawk's engines. Now, Daid knew, the real battle would begin.